This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Usha Rajagopalan grew up all over India. Her father's job took the family from state to state every few years. For Usha, growing up was a process of adapting to different languages, different customs, and different forms of Hinduism. She moved to the United States in 1987 and steadily discovered that Americans had no concept of Hinduism or Indian culture, as she puts it. And she set out to try to change that. Usha first went to her children's school to lead a celebration of Diwali, which is a festival of lights, and introduce those students to the Hindu faith and practice. For the last decade, Usha has made her home in the Triangle, where she's been a teacher for those seeking to learn about Hindu faith and customs, and she's served as a guide and spiritual leader to the area's diverse Hindu community. So when the Hindu Students Association at Duke asked the university to hire a Hindu chaplain, the students, the university, and the Hindu community all agreed that Usha was the right person for the job. She's about to begin her first semester as Duke's very first Hindu chaplain. Usha Rajagopalan joins me on the show today. Welcome to The State of Things. So good to have you.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, congratulations. A new position and student-driven. Tell us how this all came about.
This is a fascinating experience for all of us. Just amazing that when people are passionate about what they want and they're able to really synthesize that and put it together, here they are, all these students from HSA, wanting a space to have the possibility of having their practice. And when that possibility was made available through, thanks to the chaplain, Abdullah, to donate the space for the Hindus and the Buddhists to practice.
So Abdullah and Tabli, who's the Muslim chaplain.
Exactly.
Right. Had some leftover space.
Yes.
That's great.
And they were willing to take that. Wonderful. And what is beautiful about that is that Hinduism by itself, Sanatana Dharma, is about being open and being able to embrace all faiths and honor them in their own practice. And so when the Buddhists and the Hindus came together, the students decided to, you know, jointly use that space. The prayer room was itself an expression of that interfaith practice that Hindus have for, you know, thousands of years embraced.
And you've said that Hinduism is not, strictly speaking, a religion, but a way of life. So describe it for us. What is Hindu?
To be a Hindu is to honor who you are first and to know that you are bigger than what your mind and your body is, and there is something far deeper that orchestrates it all. And first, when you are deeply abiding in who you are, that is the experience. And from that experience, when you look at that world and you see that there is God or that divine spirit in everything, then that embracing in that wholeness is what makes them or drives them to be open, to see this not in the form of one particular God, which is why we have in this expression so many people in the same family may be devoted to one particular form of God versus the other. So the God is not that there are thousands of gods, but just one God expressing in so many varied forms. And so when they're able to do that within themselves, experience that vastness and then express it in diversity, then it is very easy for them to be able to embrace all other faiths or all other spiritual expressions. And that's why the sages of the old time said, just like a bee goes out to every flower and then collects them to make honey or nectar, so too should a ardent seeker or a Hindu go out there and be able to collect the knowledge of all paths and be able to see the oneness in those paths.
What you've described could easily be taken as a kind of personal philosophy of a seeker or a mystic who wants to go out and live that life. But there are unifying practices. There are ways in which an iconography that identify one as Hindu, and those practices are why, I guess, students would like to have a chaplain to be. So tell us about those practices and the role of a chaplain in a religion like yours.
It's important that both these dimensions are expressed. One is the inner world. And when you are, it's just like being on a plane and, you know, the person is asked to first take the oxygen mask and breathe first before supporting the younger ones. So it's about when they are in a university setting like this and they are going out there to find the best they can to strengthen their mind and intellect, then that is the expression and training to be out in the world. So in that setting, having the opportunity to simultaneously be away from their families where the practice may be strong, to have that guidance and mentorship, to be able to go deep within as well, it is like a seesaw, and here you have that balance happening. And so when you are well balanced within and without, then going out into that world, and as I mentioned, it's a universal principle of love and, you know, respect for all, then that ability will drive every action that you take, because this is not about just going within, but also having that surrendered action in what you do outside in the world. So this is the best place for them to have that opportunity. And I thank Duke for that.
You know, so many people talk about just what you described and said, look, I can do that, and I don't, but don't bother me or don't saddle me with the practices of religion. I'm just going to live my life that way. What is it about, and I'd like you to use maybe a particular, either a celebration or a practice in Hinduism that allows one to be more disciplined so that that practice can actually manifest itself. There is something important about a kind of discipline, isn't there?
There is, and again, there are so many varied forms depending on how the aspirant or where the aspirant is. Like, for instance, in pre-K, we use a lot of toys to help the children be able to physically, sensorially experience things before they get to using words or language or then creating something later on as a poem. So depending on where the aspirant is, if we are thinking about those kinds of stages, then some people may need a puja.
Which is
an expression of worship with a deity and a specific deity that appeals to them. If they're thinking of, hey, I want somebody who can really make me very strong in terms of my devotion, then that could be Hanuman, the greatest devotee in the Ramayana. Or if they think I want to remove my obstacles in my physical world, then that could be Ganesha. And if it depends. That's just a couple of examples.
And along those lines, you have made puppets to help us visualize. You brought Ganesha with you.
Yes,
and
he's
tell us about Ganesha.
Hello, everybody. I am Ganesha. And Gana stands for a billion universes or more, as my mentor, V. Ganeshan himself, says. And Isha is the lord of the billions of universes. And so, as you can see right here, for the audience who are not able to, he's half human and half elephant-headed. And that is to say that the spirit is neither man nor animal nor any of these forms, but is much deeper, transcending forms. And that's where the obstacle is, when we are connected to identify ourselves with our mind and body. But it's like being on the beach and being sliced up by the little piece of ocean that we see because our eyes can only see that much, but it circles the whole globe. So to be able to see that is why he's here, to support that practice.
It's interesting that you should follow this discussion of Doris Betts. It strikes me that that's precisely what she was trying to get at her writing.
I noticed that too, yes.
So when did you start making puppets?
Well, basically because I was part of the group that was helping students at the Ackland Museum as a volunteer. And I noticed that many of them had very big misconceptions about Hinduism. And it was very, very interesting to me that many of these facts were ignored and very big misconceptions continued to be a part of their training programs. So I decided that it was important for them to be able to see those pieces as they are used in the temple. And that led me to think that children would be excited by a puppet telling a story versus me. And so they became part of my tools to express these deep stories.
What's the biggest misconception you've encountered among Americans about Hinduism?
I think in general about Hinduism would be that there are many gods. And again, it takes... it continues to be so, where they don't understand that just like we play many different roles, here I am as a chaplain and then a mom and then something else, all of these are just expressions like roadmaps and signs on a road to help us see which way to go. These deities are just symbols to help us go within. And basically, that's the roadmap is not out there in the world, but to go within the world inside.
How different is it to be someone who's now charged with the role of chaplain in a culture like this? Because as we said in the introduction, there are many different practices, many different forms, a lot of diversity in India in yes. the practice of Hinduism. Now you have part of the diaspora, mostly students here. What do you do to unify all of that? People could have come from different parts of India. What happens when you want to celebrate, for instance?
And that is why this position is so important, because instead of being in our own individual practice and just thinking, oh, so that's what it is, and being surprised by all, not only our own faith, but what other faiths have as practices, and trying to find your own. So it's a balance between helping them, having some space with them individually, because Hinduism is an individual practice. It's not a collective practice. So it is about going deep within yourself, finding yourself, and being full of that truth, and then being able to embrace the world as it is. So having that balance of helping them see that wherever they are in their practice is perfect for that moment and beyond as they evolve, and at the same time, help them to appreciate all these tools available to them if they feel, you know, the need for embracing something else, is what is so beautiful about this young group coming together. And there will be certain consensus, since there's such a big buffet to offer in terms of, you know, if they would like music, then we can do bhajans. If they would like to have prayers, then we have chants. If they would like stories, then, oh boy, we have the largest, you know, volumes of stories to share. And then, of course, festivals like the Festival of Light, which every culture, every tradition, faith tradition embraces. So Diwali is coming up, which is the Festival of Lights, to ignore, to get over our ignorance and darkness. So that would be something that we can commonly celebrate.
So getting over our ignorance, would you share that with the rest of our community and not just within the Hindu community? We could all use a little bit of that.
Well, I wouldn't say that others are ignorant. What I'm trying to say is our deepening our understanding. Because when we understand other faiths, this is what I found, then our own faith deepens because we are able to use those tools to help us answer some of our own questions. So from that perspective, that interfaith dialogue is so beautiful. Just as this prayer room having the Buddhist tradition and our tradition, and I just found out that the chaplain from the Buddhist tradition has actually been, you know, exposed to a lot of Hinduism in her childhood. And I had, you know, Buddhist meditation in my past practice. So here's a beautiful marriage right there. So it's not ignorance as much as sharing.
Well, and it seems to me Duke is now well positioned with Christian Judaism, Christianity, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Islam all mm-hmm. represented on the campus to mm-hmm. create some wonderful opportunities for the greater campus as well and a larger interfaith dialogue.
Yes, and thanks to Christy Laurie Sapp and Sam Wells, Dean, for, you know, supporting the Hindu students and the Triangle community to all come together to do this.
Well, that's something else, because your position is only half funded by Duke and the rest does come from the local community. Tell us about that.
Yes, and I think that is such a beautiful marriage where everybody, this is what a community does in this Triangle, which is to bring everybody to support something that they're deeply committed to. So the students were able to go to the dean and to the Office of Religious Life, and they were willing to do that if the community would also back them, and the community came very generously together to make this happen. So that makes me feel very comfortable to be part of this group where everybody's on the same plane.
You've obviously given deep thought to this, and people in the community respect you as a spiritual guide as well as kind of an outreach leader. Were you always spiritual? Were you religious? Or did this happen to you when you found yourself in exile, as it were, outside of your country?
Well, you've used some very tall words in your introduction, but yes, I think from a very, very young age, I have always been interested in the mystery of life, which is bigger than what we see, or because the experiences cannot be ignored in the sense of just being out there but not within. So I would say that that comes from my family and my situations.
Did you feel it anymore? Was there any? Did it intensify as you left India or not?
I would say in some ways yes, because I had the space now to myself away from opportunities to be out there as I would have been in India, and that gave me the opportunity to create my own expression of Hinduism and make my search be free of many other, you know, influences. And so that has helped me create that balance of feeling like I'm comfortable sharing that, as most students come from that same, you know, about the same age group when I came here. So I feel that that would be very supportive to these students.
You begin your first semester in this new role tomorrow. What's the first order of business for you?
Well, a beautiful day where we are on retreat and we get to meet all the other chaplains and share as a community. And I haven't met anybody, so I'm really looking forward to that and seek everybody's blessings, including the community and everybody who's listening on this, to offer their blessings for this wonderful role that I've been, you know, graced to be a part of.
Great to meet you. Congratulations and good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Usha Rajagopalan is Duke University's first Hindu chaplain, and that's the state of things for today. Thank you for listening. If you have a comment about the show or you want to hear an archived edition of a past program, our website is stateofthings.org. You can find a link to a calendar of events. We're on Facebook as well. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix, Alex Granados, and Isaac Davey Aronson. Jenny Mueller is our intern. Robin Copley is the technical director. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas and Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.